Heybu Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of The Book of Mermen, a play running from Friday, November 27th through Saturday, December 19th, presented by Triangle Productions in Portland. The Book of Mermen is a new musical comedy where Mormon missionaries meet Ethel Merman. Again, that's The Book of Mermen, playing from December 19th at Triangle Productions, 1785 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Everything's coming up roses.
And this is KBOO Portland. Time is 9:59 a.m. Coming up at 10, it's Chris Andre with Air Cascadia headlines, interviews, and commentary, followed at 10:15 with Flashpoints, presenting an encore broadcast of a recent interview with independent filmmaker and journalist David Sheen. At 11 on the Radio Zine, Iraq vet and writer Roy Scranton discusses his book, Learning to Die in the Anthropocene. At 11:40, we hear the sixth partnership show with Oregon Community Media, with a focus on housing issues and the housing crisis taking place all over the state of Oregon. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support. Our matching challenge is still in effect for new members and members who increase their yearly pledge. To take advantage, please go to kboo.fm. Click where it says Donate Today.
Good morning, Cascadia. Today is Friday, December 18th, 2015, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM, kboo.fm on the web. Today's guest is Stephen Zunis. You know him well from this program. He is a professor of social sciences focusing on Middle Eastern issues at the University of California, San Francisco. He'll be talking about ISIS and why it's impossible to carpet bomb an idea despite the U.S. effort to prove that, prove the contrary. We could actually call this program From Chicago to Damascus. In each case, we are witness to the horrible spectacle of men in high places with a great deal of power at their disposal, behaving in egregious ways. Rahm Emanuel has got to go. Obviously, he can't stay continue on as mayor of Chicago. He shouldn't be in that position right now. He should have left a long time ago under the circumstances. The circumstances, of course, are of his own creation. It has been very disturbing to witness the events going on in the courtroom, to hear reports of that, and feel powerless to do anything. Black lives do matter. And our own... It would appear that our own powerlessness in the face of these events is a matter of our own choosing, and that we are responsible. We need to hold ourselves and our communities responsible for the fact that in America in 2015, it seems that black lives don't matter to the people who are most responsible for keeping the peace. No, people don't trust the police anymore. The only people who do trust the police are the very wealthy, the privileged, people who generally are don't find themselves victims of the justice system. And in the event that they do find themselves victims of our terribly, terribly dysfunctional justice system, they're able to buy their way out. There was a cartoon in the New Yorker a while back of a lawyer and a client sitting across the table from one another, and the lawyer is asking the potential client, how much justice can you afford? That sums it up. How much justice can you afford? And perhaps in the case of Syria, we might paraphrase that question as how much democracy can you afford? Because this is about regime change, despite what whatever the president might insist. It is about regime change. There is absolutely no reason to sweep down on a country if you don't like the leader of that country, and destroy it, all in the name of bringing down the leadership. We did it in Libya, and in Libya it was a catastrophe. We tried it in Iraq, again a catastrophe. And now Syria, and on a smaller scale throughout Africa and the Middle East, that's what AFRICOM is all about, an effort on the part of the U.S. military that every nation in Africa has resisted. And one reason for that resistance, that was Gaddafi, and that's why he had to go. In every case, same with Saddam Hussein. However vicious a ruler he was, it was a secular state. They had amazing cultural wealth in Iraq, and it's all gone. It's all destroyed. We laid waste to that country and left nothing behind. But, well, smoking pits of garbage that now turns out to have been poisoning soldiers. The people on the bottom, of course, not the people on the top. They have air conditioners. That all of that said, we want to welcome Stephen Zunis back to the KBOO airways and talk a little bit about ISIS, Middle East, and Syria. ISIS and Syria are not the same entity, though from impressions that one gets of the American public's understanding of affairs in that part of the world, they would seem to be one and the same. Syrian refugees are treated as though they were terrorists, and ISIS is treated as though it were a rogue nation. But really, who's the rogue nation in this scenario? Good morning, Stephen. Thanks for being with us. We are not quite ready to speak to Stephen yet, but we will be speaking with him shortly. And at that point, then we will take it a little bit deeper on the subject of Syria and ISIS. But the parallels here are very, very clear. People in high places making ghastly mistakes that hurt others, and those others deciding they're not going to take it anymore. Black lives do matter. And the situation to Syrians, refugees, and the Syrians themselves, their lives matter, and they'd rather prefer to keep their lives rather than sacrifice them in the name of U.S. imperialism. That's what, in fact, is going on. And African Americans in Chicago would rather have their lives matter. They don't enjoy being gunned down in the street simply for being who they are. No one does. And Rahm Emanuel is responsible. And in the case of Syria, the president is responsible, and in fact, we, the people, are responsible. And it's about time that we took that responsibility seriously. One more brief headline back to Oregon. An environmental group is suing the government over its failure to protect coastal populations of the Pacific marten. It's a small forest animal, and every little piece of the puzzle counts. And so that is why we people are fighting for the little creature. Organic acreage in Oregon has surged even as the number of organic farmers dwindles. What does that mean? That means that when you go to an organic grocery, that the small farmers, family farms, have been shut out of the deal because they're not able to supply shops, organic shops, with massive quantities of produce year-round, of organic albeit, but nonetheless, if you can't come up with the goods, they get cut out of the picture. So what we have in Oregon now are vast, enormous, agribusiness-sized organic farms supplying the health, so-called health food stores. Again, something that goes mostly unseen, unsung, unspoken. There's a few more. We've got some other important things going on today, of course, is the hearing in Coquille, Oregon, regarding the export terminals and import terminals now. I suppose that's not going to happen, but in Coos Bay, Jordan Cove, and now that we are able to get the ban on exporting fossil fuels is being lifted, I expect that the push to go ahead with the Jordan Cove LNG terminal is going to be going full force, which means that this meeting in Coquille is more important than ever. On that note, and of course there are many other notes from all around Oregon, it is important. We want to go into talk about Syria. It's a potential, it has a potential, a strategic potential to draw the entire world into the fight, especially with the stance that Russia is taking and the U.S. and their refusal to back down and even attempt to talk to Assad. So on that note, Stephen, welcome to the KBOO Airwaves. We're really glad to have you back today to sort this out for us. Good morning.
Good morning.
So the rise of ISIS is a direct consequence, obviously, of the U.S. invasion and occupation of Iraq. That's where it all starts. And in every case, whoever happens to be in the presidency in the U.S. seems to be loath to speak to the rulers of these countries, Libya, Iraq, and Syria, and would much prefer to bomb them flat. In the case of Syria and ISIS, which are certainly not one and the same, ISIS has no borders. It doesn't have a specific leader. That we've refused to speak to Assad, and now we've got ISIS to deal with, and there is no one to speak to. How do you speak to ISIS? How do you sit down and negotiate?
Yeah, well, in the case of ISIS, this really is a fanatical cult and they actually do have a leader, al-Baghdadi, who is a former prisoner of the United States. And like a lot of people who went through U.S. prisons, during the U.S. occupation, they became radicalized. But, you know, I can understand, why, given the nature of the organization and their fanaticism, that one cannot really expect them to be negotiating partners. There are those, including people I respect, who say the same around Syria's President Assad, given the war crimes he has committed. And I personally do think, in an ideal world, he would be on the dock in The Hague right now for war crimes. The fact is, he does have support of a lot of Syrians. Not a majority, I don't think, but a sizable minority, particularly since the crushing of the broad-based pro-democracy movement a few years ago, and the fact that the major opposition to him is now ISIS and other hardline Islamist groups, that he is indeed seen by many, if not most, Syrians as the lesser of two evils. So unfortunately, back when the nonviolent movement was strong, I was looking forward to him being deposed. But at this point, because he has a base, because I don't think there's a realistic chance of him being defeated militarily, and if he was, the country would be taken over by some fanatics, that he indeed does need to be part of the negotiating process. And again, as much as I'd like to see him deposed, his removal should not be a precondition. And at the same time, I think President Obama is correct in saying that, and Secretary of State Kerry has articulated this as well, that it is the repression by the regime, you know, that helps fuel ISIS. Even though the U.S. is very much responsible for its ISIS's creation, repression by the Syrian regime, and I would add the U.S.-backed Iraqi regime as well, is fueling the fire. So I think that that it is important that there be, part of negotiations be some kind of eventual transition of power, because again, as long as Assad and his people are in charge, it's going to be very hard to expect there's going to be peace in Syria. Though again, I think the idea of not even dealing with Assad is unrealistic.
And of course, Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi is obviously not a valid negotiating partner. Perhaps he is. It's so difficult to balance things. I see that. I mean, listening to reports coming out of the region, and for years and years, and the world knows that Assad is a criminal. They're thugs and they're criminals, and people there have been suffering horribly for many, many years. Is it their sheer brutality and power that prevents someone else from rising up? Because it seems that people would rally around and support in huge numbers another leader who wouldn't be so brutal.
Yeah, I mean, it's indeed there was an uprising, a popular uprising that did have millions of people from across regional and sectarian and ideological lines. They didn't have one replacement person in mind, but they certainly wanted the corrupt and repressive Assad regime to be overthrown. But unfortunately, these democratic forces, which I do believe ultimately represent the majority of Syrians,